Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And tonight, I have a guest that's going to be very interesting, and I have a lot of questions for him. And if you like, you can actually call in and ask questions of him, but no psychic readings tonight. Not to make anything take any longer, let's bring Brent on. So, hi, Brent. How are you?
Hey, Nancy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Brent. Now, Brent, could you do me a favor and tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do? And then I got some good questions to ask you.
Okay, great. I look forward to it. Well, my name is Brent Raines, and I edit Alternate Perceptions online magazine, which deals with a variety of unexplained phenomena, UFOs and paranormal and so on. And it's you can Google that name or go to www.mysterious-america.net. And about 4 years ago, I wrote a book called Visitors from Hidden Realms, which was a UFO book. But it tried to take a comprehensive global and historical look at the phenomenon and dealt a lot with shamanism and things and ancient, you know, clues from history. And I deal a lot with paranormal events as well. I think you have to really adequately cover the field, you have to kind of take a multidisciplinary approach to it.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I've been involved in ufology since 1967. I was just a young man, about 14, and so I'm getting on up there in my 50s now. I've been doing it for quite a while. Of course, I make my living. I work in a warehouse since 1985, Tennessee Department of Correction, at a small state prison here in Tennessee, and I'm happily married, have a lovely wife and a daughter who's now got a child of her own.
That's cool. Brent, when you first decided that you wanted to do some kind of research for UFOs, what made you decide that?
Well, what made me decide it really was reading Frank Edwards' Flying Saucers, Serious Business, which back in the 60s was a pretty popular book. And I had gotten really interested back in March of 1966 when there had been, you know, a lot of sightings nationwide. And that was when, of course, the events in Michigan were grabbing the headlines, and Dr. Hynek, who worked for the Air Force as a consultant in astronomy, had said that some of those sightings might have been swamp gas. And that made the national headlines, and a lot of people were criticizing the Air Force for trying to sweep another UFO event under the rug and calling it swamp gas, and there were cartoons and, you know, the editorials and things in the papers, and of course, what Dr. Hynek, who really was, had become a believer, he started out as a skeptic, but he tried to correct that, and later in 72, he wrote a book, The UFO Experience, where he explained that he was simply saying that some of the sightings might have been swamp gas, but by that time it was too late. People were calling their editors, and the story was out. But I was just impressed by the caliber, the credibility of witnesses, pilots, and police officers, and, you know, many responsible citizens who were observing phenomena that couldn't be just, you know, dismissed or swept under the rug as weather balloons or Venus. On a, you know, temperature inversion of a Venus on the horizon or something like that.
Why do you think our government wants to keep this so much under wrap?
Well, you know, it's of course part of any military, whether it's ours or you know, foreign military anywhere in the world. They routinely, if it's something they don't understand at the time, they pretty well routinely classify it. And a lot of times people who get up and say, well, we don't know what the answer is, and you know this is probably just another crazy UFO fanatic or something. A lot of these people don't know any better. They haven't really studied it themselves. They're just sort of a uninformed spokesperson who gets in front of the cameras, you know, or interviewed by the media. A lot of the censorship that goes back to the 40s was a lot of the people don't know what kind of history is behind, you know, this data. I mean, there's a lot of cases that were very very anomalous, and hopefully our you know, records that are still classified. I think a lot have been released through Freedom of Information and so on, and we have a lot of the Air Force you know, records, but there's still a lot of them apparently are still hidden away, and probably a lot of people now in this generation don't know how to access the information. We have presidents who have come into office, won that information, and apparently haven't got it. So, you know, we've heard lately in the recent years of the French government releasing a lot of their files to the public, and Brazil, and I just did an interview with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, a Apollo 14 astronaut, who's very interested in UFOs and paranormal phenomena and things, and he believes this is a positive sign that these governments are doing this, and he's optimistic that pretty soon, you know, the truth is going to come out about, you know, that our own government will have to follow suit. So, hopefully, he was, by the way, a teenager living in Roswell, New Mexico at the time of the reported crash in 47, and he said that he was very impressed. Not only did he get to talk with many of the citizens, but he also got to speak with many people who said they were in the military at the time and were involved in you know, the investigation and cover-up of something very strange that happened there. And that was about all that he would say about it in the interview, but he did say that, you know, there were people who were really persecuted not to say anything, and he got confessions from people who were dying and wanted to pass the information along to somebody. So here was an astronaut who was already known publicly to be open-minded about things like this, so they shared these details with him. So.
Which again, I think those are all really important. See, I totally believe that UFOs have been here many, 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 many times over. And so because of that, you know, I'm very much interested in hearing more, but that little beat means that there's a caller on the line, so let's see what they have to say. Hi, caller.
Hello. I'd like to know about after-death communication. I'd like to know if my mother has any messages for me.
Again, today's show is mostly for UFO questions, and also for questions that you might want to ask my guests about other UFO things. So next week we may do what you're asking, okay?
Okay, this week it's just about UFOs?
Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. As the government, you know, tends to hide this, I think it makes a lot of people wanting more answers instead of just, oh, it's the hot air balloon, oh, it's the swamp gas, oh, it's somebody who, you know, put a picture up there that they had modified. And I think that people aren't going to keep listening to all of these, like, the discrepancy of, you know, that can't be happening, no, that's not true, when people are starting to see it more and more, and a lot of people, you know, have seen UFOs, and yet they're afraid to come forward with it because of all the persecution that they would have. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, it seems that, you know, maybe back years ago, maybe, you know, this attitude, this caution, you know, it was just after the Cold War. Maybe it was, you know, sort of justified back then. But now people, I think, are a lot more open to this. I mean, science has advanced so long. We've, you know, and the story is out. I mean, there's not just a few reports out there. I mean, there's a mountain of testimonial evidence, and it's so much of it is from credible eyewitnesses from all over the world and describing over and over again many of the same characteristics, anomalous characteristics and features and descriptions. And, you know, it's not things that can just be dismissed as you know, natural phenomena. It's very anomalous, and, you know, you have all these repeated elements, the electromagnetic effects, as they're called, and the, you know, elements of interactions with beings that take different forms, and there's a lot of data out there, even physical trace cases, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we haven't yet got, you know, the actual crash saucer there that we can go up and kick the hubcap, so to speak, on. But, you know, there are a lot of stories that suggest that maybe somebody has that evidence and hasn't, you know,
uh-huh,
hasn't been forthcoming with it. such as some governments. But anyway.
Go ahead, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I pretty much completed that thought.
Do you think that some of our most advanced laser technology has come from something to do with the UFOs or other, you know, possible planets?
Well, of course, I've heard stories like that. I really think, of course, that we're a pretty ingenious species, and we're capable of a lot of things on our own that doesn't necessarily have to, you know, come from an extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional source, another intelligence. You have to wonder, though, as we interact, we have, you know, really a lot of people who are claiming to have interacted with various beings. Maybe there has been some of this information that has been somehow transferred or passed down from other intelligences, either through retro-engineering of alien technology from a crash site or perhaps from people who were actually in contact. There was a well-known, of course, Brazil is one of, there have been so many over the years impressive sightings, and of course they're coming out with their files now, opening them to the public. I don't think it's been completely opened yet, but a lot of the ufologists, researchers in Brazil have been working hard on it. I've been in touch with one in Brazilian named Alberto and De Carmo, and he's been involved in the UFO investigation since 1954 when he was a young boy, and he saw a flying disc himself in the sky. And there have been many, many incredible stories. I was in touch with Bob Pratt, a well-known journalist who used to work as the editor for the MUFON Journal, the Mutual UFO Network, and he was also the UFO reporter for the National Enquirer. And, you know, everybody thinks National Enquirer, tabloid sensationalism, but they were really serious years ago in investigating, back in the 70s, UFO encounters. And they sent him all over the world, and he went four times to Brazil, and after he no longer worked for the Enquirer, he continued to go about 10 more times. And I had interviewed him. He passed away a little over 2 years ago, which is great loss to the field. But I have since gotten to know Cynthia Newby Luce, who worked with him on occasion as a she's an American who has lived down near Rio de Janeiro for years, and she would travel with him, and she could translate Portuguese to many of the citizens down there, and investigated many close encounters and so on. And one case involved a well-known Brazilian general who even wrote some books about his experiences. And he was a psychic healer. Plus, he was also had become a contact. He was he had an engineering degree, and he had worked. He had come to our West Point for about 2 months to study our how we, you know, ran a military academy, and went to Brazil and duplicated a lot of the things he learned from us. And he, back in the 70s, when there was so much activity and people being reporting close encounters, the military was keeping him informed of what was happening and wanting his opinion. And I got to speak with his daughter, who has moved to the United States, his granddaughter, Denise Slater, who said that she has been in his presence and been to a place outside Brazil where they had a lot of these sightings and seen the craft themselves. She was with him once when he was in telepathic contact and brought one in, and the stories are just incredible, you know. And so I definitely see a psychic element. Many of the contacts, vast majority, where there's been an entity involved, the experiences have described the contact as being on a mental or telepathic level. They say it's like they can hear the voice inside their head. You know, they don't see lips move. They just know what's being said and what's being communicated. And So I just rambled off a bunch of stuff, and I'm not even sure I really have addressed your basic question.
No. No, you're doing well, Brent. There are some people who talk about how they think that they have had like some kind of an implant put in them as a tracking device from ETs. Have you heard that any place?
Right. I have heard that, and I've heard that from a number of people. And of course, there have been people who have had, they've x-rayed them and found that there was something there, and they did surgery and removed it. And, sometimes I think they think it's some sort of an unusual calcium deposit or something, and sometimes they're just not sure. They're still scratching their hips.
Do you think that, because like I did a lot of history work with just psychic stuff in general, and on the pyramid walls, whether it's in Egypt or also in Mexico, they have those little stick figures that look like they have bubbles around their heads. Do you think that's a possibility that what they were drawing is what they saw with, ETs coming in? Or maybe were they ETs to begin with? Do you have any idea about that?
That kind of goes back to really Eric von Daniken's Chariots of the Gods. And there were a lot of the ancient drawings that looked like, certainly like UFOs and craft and unusual beings. Although sometimes some of those are figures that were, dressed in certain ceremonial outfits, witch doctors or shamans or whatever. But a lot of the ancient stories of the Native Americans of star beings and the Muslim jinn and the little people of the Celtic race and so on, and even the Hawaiians, the little people are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these beings and what they do and their behaviors are really also very similar to our modern accounts of aliens and abductions. And in many cases, with the alien abductions, many of the people even describe like out-of-the-body experiences and being taken out of the body, or they're suddenly going through a solid wall into a craft, through a solid, metal shell into the craft, and placed on an examination table, or having a conversation with someone on board the craft, or they're viewing a picture screen and they're being shown the history of the universe, or something like this, and there's a lot of similarity to the ancient accounts of the jinns or the star people of Native American lore, or even the beings down under in Australia, that the Aboriginals of Australia have stories about the rainbow beings or whatever that would appear to them, a reptilian race or whatever. And there's a lot of cases of whether people are abducted. There are sexual assaults in these legends, and even different races of people are created from the union between these beings, these gods, and the human race, which sounds a lot like what some people in the modern abduction cases are, describing.
Mm-hmm. David Icke is a very firm believer that there is a reptilian race, and that they have actually interbred with some of the DNA is from the human race, and because of that, a lot of the reptilian, and he describes reptilians as being very cruel and very, not so kind, is coming through with a lot of the people in, in this world today. Do you happen to notice that going on?
Yes, I've heard that. I've been with different people who have described, they would be talking about the Greys, the reptilians. I have a friend I'm thinking of right now who lives up near Nashville who's had abductions, and mainly it's been the Greys. But he has had, you know, I think, seen one or two occasions some sort of a reptilian-type being, and he doesn't have anything nice to say about him because he's also influenced by the accounts of others that the other people have shared with him. But they tend to seem like they're, a lot of the reports, they're very aggressive and kind of hostile toward the people they contact.
Yeah, they're not supposed to be such nice people, but they are supposed to be intermixing with, like I said, the human DNA, and
right.
It's supposed to be being proven more and more. I don't know who's proving it or anything, but that's kind of what's being told. So I was curious if you knew more about anybody who might be experimenting to find out about the DNA being part reptilian or anything else.
No, I really don't, but that's an interesting avenue to explore. There's a lot of interesting avenues. And of course, on another level, some of these things could be, you know, almost like archetypal projections, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of like Jungian archetypes, you know, the lizard being the, you know, the reptilian being kind of the lower animalistic part of our brains, and the, you know, the angels would represent the higher, more evolved self, the higher beings, the space brothers. The Native Americans and many cultures around the world had a three-world concept, you know, the underworld, where you'd go to contact the spirits of the dead and so on, and then the middle world where we are, and then the upper world, which was the highest of all. And, of course, that was where the eagle and the condor would fly and the other sacred birds. And I think maybe they had their own version of the archetypes and so on.
Well, I'm sure that's true. A lot of times when you talk about the Native American Indians, they have many different kind of beliefs. They, you know, they believe in, of course, their animal totems, but they also, from what I've been told, believe that there is also a very much higher power here that helps to control us, that we can, you know, go to if we know how to do that. Do you find that to be true?
Yes, they don't advertise. They don't force us to believe their way, but a lot of them seem to have a lot of insight and wisdom about. In fact, the Hopi Indians out in Arizona, a lot of them are really looking for look at UFOs as being connected with the Kachina, their ancestors from long ago, and believe that there is an extraterrestrial connection to their past, and they also believe that they are also part spirit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And which I met a Native American medicine man back in the 70s who talked about similar beings. He was Sequanahawk, lived in Pennsylvania, and he called them the Yadusqua. And he would tell me that UFOs, I have identified UFOs. He said they're spirit manifestations. And he would tell some really interesting experiences that he had with these beings. And he saw them as related to, you know, the ancestral memories of his people. And I've recently in my magazine, I've written quite a bit about, you know, the Native Americans and been in touch with a number of people. In fact, I've just recently been interviewing an Apache medicine woman out in New Mexico who talks about the Star People, has had close encounters, contacts with alien beings, but of human form. And for her, she says they're very positive experiences. She's often receives a healing from these experiences. And she'll be having some sort of physical problem and has an encounter, and then she goes to the doctor and says, well, it's not there now, you know. You're doing okay, which is what she suspected, you know. Mm-hmm. And she calls them the star people. And I've also been in touch with another medicine man who's of mixed heritage, Karuk and Seneca and Cherokee out in California, who's known as Medicine Grizzly Bear. And he was a complete skeptic about UFOs. He's a college professor, too. And so he believed the many of the white man's ways. And he was simply doing, you know, he was a teacher of Native American history and such for a college out there in California. In fact, he taught also out, I think, in Seattle, Washington, and someplace in Idaho. But in 74, he began to have a series of dreams in which these eagles would come to him from four directions. And they would come together, and they would suddenly turn into flying saucers. And he went, he had this a number of times, and he went to a medicine man, a Seneca medicine man, asked him, "What do these dreams mean?" And he said, "It means you're going to have a contact with space people." And he said he didn't receive that information too well, and he regretted his reaction, well, you know, later on. But he said, "That's crazy, you know." And he said, and the medicine man said, "Well, I'm just telling you, I'm just telling you what you asked me, and I'm just telling you what I believe."
Mm-hmm.
So later on, he had the experience. This craft appeared, and he was beamed aboard it, and it was quite traumatic for him. And he was given some predictions of the future. There were four beings aboard, and they were Indians, and they were medicine men, and they had given him some information about, you know, the dangers that the world was in now, and what man needed. And anyway, he came out of this experience. He just, again, he was in denial. He didn't want to really address this. He went up to another medicine man for help, and he drives up to this mountaintop, and he sees the medicine man outside his house, and he's looking around, and there's eagles, and he looks up a little higher in the sky, and he sees the medicine man chanting or something. He's looking up at a group of four flying saucers flying over in the sky. And the medicine man says to him, "Okay, what have you got yourself into now? Because I don't think I can help you with this."
That's cute.
He said, "Just please," he said, you know, he followed him in the house, you know, and he says, "I just need you to do a ceremony with me. I need to balance myself." Anyway, it all worked out. He's doing much better now.
That's a good thing.
Yes, very good thing.
Now, have you yourself had any contact with any flying saucers or ETs?
Well, really, I've had some unusual experiences, you know, that to me, and they're really not when someone says a flying saucer. I've seen lights in the sky at a distance, but as far as experiences, well, really kind of more on the spiritual, paranormal sense of it, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which, of course, I lump it all in there. I follow a multidisciplinary approach here. I see a lot of things as being interconnected, whereas a lot of people want to just follow one straight line down the middle. But I have, I have seen little balls of light at close range that were kind of pulsating, white, translucent, marble-sized, swarming around. They seemed to be a few feet away, and then suddenly the experience was over and I was back in bed, so it could have been an out-of-the-body experience. At the time, it seemed very real and physical. But, you know, it was during a time, too, when I was looking for spiritual answers really, really, you know, I wanted to know what was good, what was bad, and I had just said a prayer one night, you know, Lord, just show me the truth, and kind of let go of it, and then two nights later, I had this this experience, so I kind of connected with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to, this swarm of lights, it was just a pure white light, kind of translucent little globes, and there seemed to be hundreds of them, and they seemed to swarm at near the floor, out in the hallway outside my bedroom, and this was in 1975 up in the state of Maine at my parents' home, and it seemed to take the form of a small four-legged animal, and then suddenly, boom, I'm back in bed, you know, and I'm looking around thinking, what just happened, you know? And I knew not much time had passed because, you know, the door was open. My dad was getting ready to go to bed, and he was in the bathroom, probably at the start of the experience, and still there. So, you know, it was quick. And anyway, those elements seemed to kind of, years later, kind of fit together with some other experiences. And since being involved in, my wife is part Cherokee, and we've been involved with a number of Native American people and doing different ceremonies, been in dozens of sweat lodges. For a while, we even had a sweat lodge here behind our home. And there was one time that I felt that it was very important after one of these sweats that I go to a ancient site which had rock carvings down in Alabama, and I've been told about the site by our friend Dove, who's part Cherokee and Choctaw, and she was also the sweat lodge leader, and I decided I needed to go there, that there was a certain symbol in the writings there that I needed to see. I had no idea what it was, but anyway, we made plans, and later went down there, and I was all excited. I mean, it was a neat place. It was a large rock shelter, but huge, like 200 feet across, and there were all these rocks with carvings on them, you know, and I was taking pictures and drawing what I was seeing, and Dove was there. Brent, park your butt over here. Get out of your head. And I said, I can't. I'm all excited. I've never been here. This is new. This is interesting, you know. And then I came away from it, and I had no idea what it was I was supposed to have actually found, discovered, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then a week or two later, no, it was about a week later, I've got all this in a journal, we're in a sweat lodge behind the house here. Dove's leading it, and it's about, I think, the second round. And I, all of a sudden, I see a cactus. And I realize that this cactus, like a traditional southwestern cactus, was in the shape of the what they call the bird's foot, or the crow's foot, a turkey's foot that was... rock carvings that were down at this site. And I realized that was the symbol I was supposed to pay attention to. And while we were there that weekend, there was another site we went to nearby. And this was the same day. And while we were at that site, I also had seen in my mind's eye like a rotating disc of energy with a beam coming out of it, and I could see people screaming and scared of this noise it was making. And I got the impression of the word Southern Cross, and I had no idea what all this could have meant. No idea. But by coincidence, years later, I met Andrew Collins, from England at a friend's house over in Memphis, and he's just come out with a book called The Cygnus Mystery, where he's found these connections all over the world, all of these different cultures, about this Northern Cross, the Cygnus constellation in the northern part of the sky that one time, like 17,000 years ago, was Deneb, was like the pole star. You know, right now it's Polaris, but periodically the rotation of the Earth on the axis, it shifts from one star to another, whichever one becomes the pole star. So anyway, there were a lot of legends about sacred birds and sounds connected with, considered the like heaven. This is where the soul goes to after death. Many cultures saw this as a special place in the heavens, and they associated it with this cross constellation, the Northern Cross, and with a bird, depending on which culture you're in, the eagle or turkey, whatever, and often the symbol of the turkey foot or the bird foot. The same one down at this site in Alabama. And he had stated that there was possibly a neutron star. He had it pictured in his book as being a circular area of energy with kind of a beam coming out of it, which he says we're on the flight path of. You know, this comes right through the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that this this gamma rays, X-rays, and all this radiation. Back during Paleolithic times, it was pretty intense. Apparently, there's evidence in the polar, you know, ice core going down to that level, you know. And he believes that, you know, he's written this whole book exploring his thoughts on this, that they became aware that there was an energy that was hitting the Earth from that part of the sky. That it probably... you know, like astronauts who have been in space, sometimes they have perceived these lights from gamma rays coming through the ship, you know, that affects the optic nerve. And he believes that something happened similar to that and affected their spiritual beliefs at that time. And it got incorporated into what they believed. So anyway, I just thought it was a lot of interesting connections. Also, the Southern Cross is considered by different cultures to be the mirror of the Northern Cross. And see, I'd gotten the word Southern Cross. So I had all these coincidences that meant really nothing to me until I met this gentleman from England who was writing this book. You know, I had the Southern Cross. I had this thing with this noise. When we got talking about the importance of birds and sound, and I've been working with the Peruvian whistling vessels. These are pre-Columbian vessels from clay vessels from different cultures in Peru, and the ones I have are from the Chimú culture, which was about 11 to 1300 AD, but they've been traced back to about 500 BC and earlier. And they were believed to have been shamanic instruments. And many people who are, you know, what we have are fully functional replicas. I have probably about a dozen of them laying around here. And I'll take a number of these and do little workshops, presentations, and people report all sorts of interesting effects, altered states of consciousness, past life memories suddenly slip in, or they're having like visions or out of the body experiences. All kinds of things are reported. And predominantly, a lot of people who are experienced with meditation and familiar with chakras, or even those who aren't familiar with chakras, describe similar experiences of the chakras being activated. And he was quite interested to find out that the whistling vessels make a noise that many people have described as being similar to a hummingbird around your ears, a fluttering kind of hummingbird-type effect. In fact, there was a statue that the Chimú had that was found that shows a man sitting like he's meditating, and it shows he had these earrings that were like little hummingbirds around both of his ears. and he told me that he had heard that the hummingbird in the Nazca Plains was facing the Nazca, Cygnus constellation at certain times of the year. So anyway, just, you know, a variety of things that make you stop and wonder and say, wow, you know.
Of course. Brent, can you give out your websites again where the people can go get this information?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And I'll mention, too, that we have a lot of archive material. We put an issue out each month, and at the beginning of each month, and we have an interview feature or a couple interview features each issue, and a variety of different articles and columns, and also book reviews. And it's at www.mysterious-america.net.
Okay, and can they get your magazine there?
Sure. We posted at that website, and it's Alternate Perceptions, and it's free. And like I say, the issues, they can click on the front page there, the main page. There's a place on the upper left side where they can click to view back issues, and they can just knock themselves out.
Have you been to Cusco?
No, I have. I would love to. I thought I was going to get to go a few years ago, but I haven't gone yet.
It's kind of cool. I got to go there about 20 years ago. It was really quite interesting, actually.
Well, I can imagine it's got to be very interesting.
Yeah, from the plane you can see all those like symbols that they talk about that you cannot see when you're on the ground. It, like I said, it's pretty interesting. You know, I don't know how it is now, but 20, 25 years ago, it was really kind of quite interesting. And then we went up to the top of the mountains and everything, which, you know, was also pretty spiritual up there. It was just kind of really neat.
Oh, yes. I can imagine. I've talked to people who have been there. And in my book, I interview Benita Luz, who has actually lived about a year in Peru. And she has led a lot of people on tours. And plus, I have a contact who lives down near Lima. His name is Giorgio, and he's been a consultant to the Peruvian Air Force and a civilian consultant, and has had UFO experiences himself, and plus the mental contact thing, too. So it's, you know, there's a lot of interesting stories down there.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your book? First, give us the title again.
Okay, the title is Visitors from Hidden Realms, and you can find it at our website, or you can go to Amazon.com. And it was published, I don't know where the time's gone, but it was back in 2004. But I think that the information that's in it, you know, now is just as relevant, you know, as it was, back when it was first published, it's still just as relevant, significant
mm-hmm.
now as it was back then.
Do you think that there is going to be many more UFO sightings in the very near future?
Well, there's quite a few going on now across, you know, the world. We had those sightings out in Texas that drew a lot of international attention recently, around the first of the year. And I've heard a number of people saying there seem to be more sightings here recently than there have been in a while. I'm not sure how they determine that, but, I mean, there certainly have been quite a few reports. We don't seem to have the major flaps like we used to, like 1966 and 1973. It mostly, you know, with the internet, it's like there's something going on all the time, so it's hard to tell, you know. And even back when we did have all these, you know, sensational stories that seemed to happen in waves, how much of that was really influenced by the media? I mean, how do we know really sometimes whether there's really a real increase, or it's simply because for a certain period of time it kind of becomes a novelty and the media jumps on it and reports it, and then after it's no longer of interest to the public, then they just stop running it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there is this group called the Men in Black?
Well, there are reports of Men in Black that are credible, I think. I've talked with a medical doctor who had a MIB encounter, and he was involved as a hypnotist in an abduction case I worked on, and one of the recipients in that case even described MIB visitation shortly after, the sighting. And so I've interviewed a number of people where the MIB elements, occurred, and it's there. It seemed to be connected more with the psychic entity elements, really, than I think the government, the ones that I was involved with the doctor, who was also a spiritualist medium, by the way. So he had, an awareness of things psychically. And the way he described this being, it was more of an apparitional type being. It seemed to know things. It said you have a nickel and a penny in your right pocket. And the doctor reached in his pocket, pulled it out, and he said, "Watch what happens to these two coins." And they began to glow and then disappeared in front of his eyes. And it gave him warning that if he didn't destroy his files, his soul might disappear like those coins. So he was pretty shook up, and he burned his files. And, I don't know what good that did, because the story was still published. I don't think there was anything that was much left out. And
They need to publish them, because, like I asked you right off the bat about the government doing these cover-ups. To me, for the government to continue to do cover-ups and to not tell us the truth only makes us more suspicious of what else are they hiding. Not only that, but as more and more people are seeing the UFOs or even coming in contact with them, the more it's going to be taken up by the media, and the more they're going to make this big deal of it, and the more panic people are going to get into if they're not told the truth.
Right. Well, I always felt kind of with the MIB that a lot of the real anomalous cases, the entity suddenly, the MIB suddenly shows up before they've even had time to talk to anybody about it. It was like they knew everything about them already when they got there and about the sighting, even though they maybe some cases didn't tell anybody, that they were in on it, that perhaps they were, an entity themselves, and that by doing what they did, some of the cases that I've read about and been involved with, they seem to draw more attention to the case than they did actually diverting it. So I think maybe if there's a motive, it was more to bring attention than rather to actually distract from it,
Mm-hmm. I've had an encounter, but there's a few things that's happened to me that is very unexplained. Like, I was in nurses training, and they asked somebody if they wanted to do one of the sleep deficit practices. And I said, sure. I raised my hand, and I said, I'll take a nap. Well, I did. And the only problem is, and I was out for probably 2-3 hours, and what happened is my blood pressure dropped down below shock, which is like 80 over 40. My pulse got down to like probably, less than 10 beats a minute, and my respirations were like 2 every minute or less, and they thought I was dying. And they couldn't wake me up. I mean, nothing, they were shaking me, and this is what they were telling me. They were shaking me, they were pulling on me, they were trying everything they could. And somewhere in the distance in my head, I heard a phone ringing. And when I heard that phone ringing, it woke me up. And it's weird, it's a strange thing, because nobody can help me with it, nobody can help answer it. But the school itself never did any more sleep practices because it had scared them so bad. And I have bruises on my arms. It's happened to me probably about 4 or 5 times. Lately it hasn't happened, but it's happened about four or five times where I'm gone. I don't remember anything. I don't feel anything. I know I don't want to come back. And it's the strangest feeling. And then when I do come back, it's like I'm slammed into my body really hard. And if I try to get up and walk around, within just a couple seconds after that, my whole body starts shaking like I'm convulsing. And it's just strange. It's just strange like that. And that's happened to me a few times. It's like, okay, well, I don't know where I'm going, but wherever it is, I must like it, because to come back. And the only thing that brings me back is a telephone ringing. It's a strange, strange thing.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Have you ever done regressive hypnosis to try to remember, you know, what?
No. In fact, I've not really told anybody about those experiences, only because people look at you and go, what, are you crazy? It's like, well, no. This is just kind of what I went through, and I can't explain it. I mean, when I come out, my pulse gets back to normal. My heart, you know, my heart beats normal. My blood pressure is normal. My breathing is normal, except for this shaking all over, like I'm just, you know, quivering and can't stay in control. So I have to sit down.
Hmm.
You know, and it's strange. And
yeah.
Like I said, it hasn't happened in a while, but it's happened to me about four or five times, and it's just unexplainable.
Yeah, it has to mean something. And that's like a lot of this data, you know, it means something, but, you know, the jury's still out on a lot of it. But that's where I think you have to really be open-minded, but at the same time, you have to really be objective, and it's hard. Often you feel kind of like a politician, you know, because... You know, you want to find out things, and you want to get people to talk and open up, but at the same time, they don't, you know, you say something, it's the wrong thing, and they don't like what they hear, and so they just completely shut you down. And really being a skeptic sometimes is bad as being a believer, because, you know, both of them are guilty of trying to censor what they don't want to hear.
That would be true.
And... So you've got to really want to know, you know, whether your basic orientation is kind of toward the skeptical or toward being a believer. Mine's being toward the believer. But at the same time, I realize the importance of being open, you know, and being a little flexible and trying to be objective and to walk that walk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's another thing that's kind of strange, and I'll tell you this real quick, and then you're going to give out your information again before our time is up. But I can be, and this only happens if I am laying on my right side, which makes my left side up. I will be in a dead sleep, you know, just really copping the Z's, and all of a sudden, I wake up. But it's not a quick wake up, it's kind of like a slow wake up.
Uh-huh.
But there's like a trans, you know, like the old little radios that we used to have, those little things that when you turn the dial, it goes, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? That will go on for about 15 minutes. Behind the back of my left ear, and I'm awake. I'm totally awake, and I'm hearing it, and it's like just strange, because I know I'm awake. I know that I'm hearing this sound, and then in about 15 minutes, I go to sleep, and I just sleep so good until I wake up.
Hmm.
And that's happened a couple times. I'm going, okay, well, that's kind of strange, but you know, whatever it is, it is.
Yeah. Now that's always your left ear.
Uh huh. Never
okay.
The right. It's always behind my left ear, and it's just. Sounds like a little transistor radio, you know, taking the dial and changing it from dial to dial kind of quickly, you know, so you're getting all that static stuff coming in. And it's just, it's like, well, okay.
Yeah. Well, there's a phenomena. I had, let's see, there was a lady down in Florida years ago I met who had a close encounter with a UFO. And afterwards, within 3 or 4 days, it was like a poltergeist manifestation erupted in her home. And one of the phenomena that occurred was a masculine voice that would call her name, and always from the left side.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of researched that, and I found stories of psychic mediums who described hearing phenomena from their left side. And a few years ago, I was talking to a kind of a neuroscientist up in Canada who worked with... Michael Persinger, who's interested in temporal lobes and limbic system, part of the brain, and how magnetic fields and things can affect it. And according to this researcher named Todd Murphy, it was my description of this left side of thing was a classic hemispheric thing. The event is coming into the right part of the brain, the psychic part of the brain, that's being perceived in the left side or something. But and there was also in Nandor Forder's Encyclopedia of Psychic Science. It's a very old encyclopedia, but it's very good. It has all kinds of data, and it has a thing in there about sightedness, left-sidedness, a lot of cases from mediums. So
it's kind of different. Brent, can you give out your information one more time, and then we're going to let everybody go.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, it's Alternate Perceptions Magazine, and I'm the editor, and along with my co-editor, Dr. Greg Little, who's a nationally certified psychologist, and we've been doing this magazine together since 93, and it's Alternate Perceptions, and the website is www.mysterious-america.net.
You know, Brent, it's been great having you on the show. We'll have to do this again, and I hope all the listeners enjoyed it, and I really thank you for being on and taking the time.
Well, thank you, Nancy. I have sincerely enjoyed it.
And we'll have to do this again.
Great.
Anyway, thank you very much, and thank you, the listeners. I hope you enjoyed today's show. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk again. Take care. Bye now.